welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies, or also known as the Talking Pictures Podcast. I'm Neil Rosen. We were off last week.
The Restin Podcast, the RIP.
It's not the RIP. We're alive and well.
I guess, friend.
I'm Neil Rosen, joined by Bill Bregoli, as always.
I'm drinking wine.
And we're joined, as always, by Bill McCuddy.
Yes, I'm drinking wine, too.
And look who's back. Our buddy, Mike Sargent from WBAI. You still on WBAI?
I'm still on BAI.
All right,
he brought the wine.
Yeah, he brought some wine today. That's very good.
They almost didn't want to let me in, though, with the wine. Just blocked.
That's a whole other story.
Bill's got security on his street.
No. And now you're going to have people thinking it was some kind of a... No, we had a... In my building, there's a big high-rise going up.
We're right by Carnegie Hall. We're doing this right across this, pretty much across the street from Carnegie Hall. And how do you get to Bill's apartment? Apparently, you don't have to practice.
You know how to get to Carnegie Hall. You go to 57th and 7th.
Yes. Okay, thanks. What are we talking about today? We're going to be talking about Spider-Man, which opened last week, but we were off last week.
A couple people saw that.
Because of the Independence Day holiday weekend. And we're going to be talking about War for the Planet of the Apes, which does open this weekend. And we're going to be talking about a ghost story.
The new Casey Affleck wears a bedsheet movie. That I have to tell you is, spoiler alert, really great, but it's not going to make 10 cents.
We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. We're going to talk about The Beguiled, and we're going to talk about, I think Mike has seen Valerian. You want to talk about
I
that?
Have.
We can talk about
that.
Is that embargoed? Are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, it's next week, so
probably can't talk about that.
Well, all right.
I've seen it, though.
We won't talk about Valerian, but we're going to talk about a bunch of other things. The Return of Curb Your Enthusiasm, a short movie that I saw on HBO, and an article that Bill McCuddy brought to my attention about... Oscar season being the sole reason that studios actually turn out grown-up films. We'll get to all of that, but let's start out by talking about last week's news, which is Spider-Man Homecoming. So Mike Sargent, who's a big comic book fan, and he's a Marvel, very up on the Marvel stuff, tell me your thoughts on this.
Marvel.
Thank God it wasn't an origin story about being bit by the radioactive spider again. They didn't do that for the third time.
They definitely don't need to at this point. I mean, yes, like you said, this is the sixth Spider-Man film in 15 years. It's the third reboot. and it is finally bringing Spider-Man into what is known as the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which they introduced him last year in Avengers, and it was a hit. And now
MCU, by the way, is Money Cashier. Universe.
Money Cash University. It's a precursor to the Trump University. And so basically, at this point, what they've done is they've really brought Spider-Man back to some of the basics of the comic back in the day, where he's a teenager. So it's sort of if John Hughes made a superhero movie, that's what the Spider-Man movie is.
And this is the Spider-Man we saw
in the Avengers.
Right,
Avengers.
He makes a cameo.
He's funny and kind of like, almost like Ant-Man. He's like got the
self-deprecating. In his cameo appearance in the last movie, and I know Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. as Iron Man is in this one. Didn't he make some reference? We're going to get you a better suit.
In
the Avengers movie, right?
Yes,
which
he
gets in this movie.
Does he get it, but what they've done to bring him into the universe, you know, is Tony Stark has become like the tech for everything. So Tony Stark built the Spider-Man costume that Spider-Man has, and I don't want to give away any spoilers or anything, but so Spider-Man is clearly tied into the Marvel Universe through Tony Stark. He kind of mentors him.
Was this the series Sam Jackson was always the guy who explained everything, or is that the other universe?
Well,
is that the,
you know, Sam
hasn't
Jackson,
he been in there before as Fury, right? That sort of like explains why everybody's together.
They kind of dismantled
Basil Exposition, they called it in Austin Powers.
Did Samuel Jackson Jackson's character die in one of the movies?
Right. He died and then he came back. Yes. But they sort of dismantled...
He died and came back.
What's the organization, Bill? What is it? From Marvel? The
Fury?
Yeah. What's the name of his organization?
Fury.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Stark.
Right.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes. Yeah. So they dismantled S.H.I.E.L.D. and then they put it back together. And you know, I think he's going
to
make...
That's what happened to Brooke S.H.I.E.L.D.
...a comeback in the third fields, in the third wave of Marvel movies. But I'd say this movie's good. It's got Michael Keaton, who has, you know, superhero pedigree from playing Batman, and he played Birdman, and now he's playing the Vulture. So it's fun, though there are plot holes you could drive, you know, basically the Hulk through. But you have to kind of just accept that, yes, this is a movie.
But it's a good ride, and it doesn't feel tired. It doesn't feel like the franchise is out of.
It's funny.
I found the Andrew Garfield ones to be like horrible, just horrible. I thought he was miscast. I didn't believe him as the pathetic, beat up kid before he got. You know, in the Tobey Maguire one, when he's bullied in school and he comes back with all the superpowers, you know, you believe that he's like this, you know, kind of like frail kid that, you know. I thought that Andrew Garfield could kick the shit out of anybody before he got bit by the radioactive spider. So I never bought him. This kid, what do you think? What do you think, Mike?
Well,
he's
a
little mousier.
More of a kid. He's definitely, you know, you buy that he's 15 and that he's, you know, he's gotten superhero powers and he just wants to have fun. You know, you get that. He wants to be an Avenger, and that's like his
Mike, you got to talk about his best friend, too.
Yes, his best friend. Well, his best friend, as you've seen in the trailers, discovers that he's Spider-Man. So, you know, it's interesting because the other thing they've done with this, they've gone out of the way to make it very multiculturally cast. You know, Flash Thompson, who in the comics was this big 6-foot, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Hulk.
Isn't his
now,
love interest?
Well, his love interest is a woman of color. And
right, right.
Flash is a man of color, and his best friend is a
Zendaya
person of
from
color.
The Disney Channel.
What's it? Yes, Zendaya.
Who is a big marketing play for Sony. She's in it. She's doing all the publicity. She's in the movie for all of many 5 minutes. That's
the thing. She's good. She's memorable. She plays the Ally Sheedy character from The Breakfast
Club, essentially.
Yeah, she's
very cute. She does a good job in the movie.
And you wouldn't know that she's like 6 feet tall when you watch that movie. Have you seen the Spider-Man movie?
Yeah, I saw it, and I did the junket with you.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you did.
And you spoke to some of the people.
That's right. Well, they spoke to all of us. They spoke to me and Mike and 1,100 mommy bloggers who were there. This was amazing.
Yes, they did.
They actually, at the end of the press conference, and I'll play some sound from the press conference in a minute. At the end of the press conference, they asked us all to stay seated so the mommy bloggers could come up and have their picture taken with everyone at the dais.
Mike and I were talking about this, actually, a couple of days ago. Why are mommy bloggers getting preferential treatment over more established journalists?
What? They're the new Golden Globes.
Offer up a possible
idea why that is?
If they get organized, we're all screwed.
You know what? Here's why. I think and this brings up another problem.
Spider-Man and mommy bloggers. I could understand if it was like that horrible Goldie Hawn Amy Schumer movie, mommy bloggers. Okay, but what, you know, some parenting movie. But really, why? Marissa Tomei plays Aunt May, but I mean, why mommy bloggers in this particular movie? It doesn't make
Mike,
sense.
You want to jump in here?
I'll jump in here because I think what's happened is, you know, the importance of the film critic is no longer what it once was. People do not rely on film critics to decide what movie they want to see. They have now, at best.
But if they want to listen to a podcast,
amen, brother.
You look at the arbitration of like, oh, how many tomatoes did it get? Is it fresh or is it certified? That's about it. You don't necessarily have to read the reviews. You can just look and see.
It's 25% of
Rotten
Tomatoes.
So that's one. So they've kind of made critics like something to arbitrate, you know, or to, what is the word? Am I saying the wrong word?
Well, no. Curate or steward.
Okay, right. So they aggregate.
Or aggregate.
The critics. Then the second thing is, it's really about targeted marketing. I could say for myself, when I started in this business, I did major market radio. I got treated like a king. I got flown out to all the junkets and everything. Online, they didn't really know what to do with it. But over time, online rose. Universal.
You're saying now it is superseded.
Long superseded. Radio is, you know,
they don't care.
I can
vouch for that myself.
Right. So you
they don't
can
fly
vouch,
you
they
anywhere
don't care.
Anymore.
So
well, call
but
me
what
Andy
is a
and
value?
I'll be a mommy blog.
Right. What online did is make it easier for them. We could say cliche the bean counters, make it easier to see who and how many people are we reaching. You know, a radio station can show you their Nielsen's or their Arbitrons or whatever, and potentially you assume that maybe, but who's going to deal with that? You can look at any blog, see how many people, how many followers, what it is. So every movie has a target that they're going after, and a Spider-Man movie is a family film. Well, who in the family decides what movie to bring the kids to?
Moms.
So just like, you know, they have to market to women because women tell the guy what movie they want to see, they're going to market a certain way. So bloggers,
the power of the apron.
They apron are a significant part of they have a significant following. A lot of people.
Were there any hot moms?
No.
I didn't see it.
You want the truth? No.
I didn't
Not
see
the ones that sat next to me.
So Bill Bregoli.
Want the truth?
So let's go around.
Rough looking group, right?
Would you recommend Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah.
And would you say that out of all the Spider-Mans, which is your favorite Spider-Man still?
Actually, this one. I had the most fun with this
really?
One. Yeah, I
this
really
is my
did.
Favorite of all of them.
All of them, even the Toby.
You're like Barbara Broccoli when they ask her which is her famous, her favorite Bond. She always says the one that's doing it right now.
Yeah, no,
really,
this one was fun. I don't usually like
compared
these.
To the first two Toby Maguire.
Well, first of all, I really like the first two Toby Maguires.
I
hated the second Andrew Garfield, and I hated the third Toby Maguire. I thought the first Andrew Garfield, I enjoyed that they did some things that they never did in the Raimi versions, okay? In this one, there are things about this I really, really like, okay? But like I said, there are also some things where I have to suspend my disbelief. Oh, you work in a junkyard, but you know how to make alien technology. Okay, all right, you know, I'll just, okay. You know, so there's certain things you just have to accept. So that being said, I'd say it's pretty much up there, but I still like the first two Tobey Maguire.
Right, no,
the first two are the those are kind of like
to me,
the gold standard.
That's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And as old as it is, the first Superman 2 to me, which is such old
Superman
technology.
Superman 2 is a great film.
It's still the best
great
Superman,
film.
Still the best it,
absolutely.
Superman movie to me,
absolutely.
You know what I mean?
So who spoke to us at this press conference?
Well, Tom Holland.
Tom Holland?
No, we all did. This is from the press conference.
Peter Parker.
This is the press conference. He is Peter Parker.
And he's the first British Peter Parker.
No, he's not. Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield.
That's right. Andrew Garfield was British, too.
Well, now, this is a trend we can actually talk about. When it comes to hiring some sort of superhero, an American superhero, they go British.
Well, this is
Disney. Is that true? Captain America is American. I mean,
all right. Well, he is.
But
Wonder Woman's Israeli.
How about
Batman was British?
Was
Welsh.
Star Wars, Finn, and aren't they both British?
They're both British. Batman was Welsh. Christian Bale.
Well, Star Wars is kind of.
There was Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill, who was Superman.
That's American.
No, but Eric Bana also, which is Australian.
Right. Henry
Cavill is English. And
Henry Cavill's
And his name memorable.
Scarlett Johansson
and
because
is so
Black
is,
Widow.
What's his name?
Tom Holland.
A Batman.
Oh, Batman.
What's his name?
Christopher Reeve?
No.
The great British actor Batman. Christopher Reeve.
Christian Bale is Welsh.
Christian Bale.
He's Welsh. He's not
British. Christian Bale.
Batman.
Still.
Yeah, nonetheless.
Not American.
But that's
and, of course, Michael Caine's in all of them.
Well, Superman's American.
Well, he always had a British part.
He wasn't. No, it wasn't always. Henry Cavill's British.
Henry Cavill's British.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
So anyway.
It stumped the panel.
Digressed.
So no matter where he came
you
from.
You proved your point.
No matter where he came from.
Wow.
Tell us what.
Tom Holland was asked about taking on the role.
Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man had such a huge impact on me as a kid. He was my role model growing up. He was my favorite character. So I had to keep reminding myself that I'm going to have that same impact on kids of the younger generation. So I really wanted to, you know, do them proud and to be a solid role model for them.
So does that mean he's going to play poker now and lose millions of dollars in those high-stake games? You know, they're making a movie about that girl, about the woman Molly who organized all those high...
Yes,
they wrote about it in Vanity Fair. Did you read about that, Neil? And it's going to be like, it's supposedly one of the hottest new movie scripts out there, and everybody's afraid because it's going to out all of the guys like Tobey Maguire who played in these high-stakes games.
Well, I think what they'll do is they won't say who they are, but we'll know who they are.
Well, hopefully. Who else did we talk to?
Well, also Michael Keaton was asked about whether he prefers playing supporting roles like he does in this movie or leading roles.
I've been, you know, able to play a lot of different things, little tiny parts and big parts. They're both fun. They're both different. You know, it's more iconic and you make a hell of a lot more dough being the big lead guy. But, you know.
Does anybody remember when his career was almost over?
Yeah,
like he was doing small roles in like that Steven Soderbergh movie.
His career
Right.
He was gone.
Like Multiplicity.
Birdman.
After Multiplicity. He was tired of duplicating himself.
He was dead in the water, and Birdman brought his career back.
Well, he had a couple things right before that. But
do you think
But Out of Sight
was more money for The Founder? Which is kind of like a small movie where he's the lead role, or a several hundred million dollar Spider-Man movie where he's a supporting role.
That's
what do you think?
That's a good point. I don't know. Maybe he got producing credit on
Listen,
the Ray Kroc.
He's happy to be working. He's happy to be working and getting a lot of love. He comes out, he gets a lot of love, you know, and you realize, you always liked Michael Keaton.
Hey, listen, but we're burying the lead because the big movie that everybody's probably listening to this podcast for is the new...
Let's
go, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. But this is the new Planet of the Apes film.
Absolutely
and
nothing.
It's testing through the roof. It opens Friday. And
who sang that song?
Ah, that's War. Wrote sang that song.
No, War. What is it good for? Who? Come on.
War.
War was the
War.
Group.
It was the group.
Jesus.
I'm afraid you're wrong.
What?
Get
huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was War.
It's Edwin Starr, who also did 25 Miles.
No.
What? No.
War is War. Did the song?
No. War did. Why Can't We Be Friends?
And they did War.
No. War, no. Edwin, you want to bet?
I'll bet. I'll bet you.
I have the album in the other room.
A glass of wine.
I have the album.
If I'm right, I have to pour you a glass.
I'm telling you that it's Edwin Starr. Don't doubt me on music, my friend.
It's not Edwin Starr.
And Edwin Starr did 25 Miles from Home, My Feet Are Hurting Mighty Bad.
Yes, he did.
Which was used on a recent Toyota-thon commercial or something like that, you know?
You're an Edwin Starr fan.
Edwin Starr passed away recently.
Yes, he did.
We need to have wine at all of these.
And so, what is the answer to the question? The answer is
Edwin Starr. All right.
War broke out here in the podcast. We had to stop tape, which we never do. You know we're honest, and we go live to tape every week.
I told you it was Edwin Starr.
All right, come in off the ledge now.
Not believe me.
No one can believe you're right either, but there it is.
See what happens when you start drinking wine?
Yes. All right. Yeah. So anyway, War for the Planet of the Apes. Okay.
War for the Planet of the Apes. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Yeah,
go
Bill.
First.
Bill.
It takes place after the first two Planet
love
of the Apes.
Love this movie.
I love this movie. This is really cool. Caesar, the head ape, is in charge, but Andy Serkis once again.
Right.
Though you can't tell unless you realize that he's underneath 16,000 layers of CGI pixels. But it is him, and he's got pretty intense eyes. But his character Caesar suffers a personal loss, and he has to go on a mission where he's up against the humans. One of them is played by Woody Harrelson, who is sort of this movie turns into Apocalypse Now for a little while with Woody Harrelson's crazy colonel character, and then it turns into The Great Escape. But don't worry about that. It's not really aping them so much as it is
The Great
an homage.
Apescape.
Yes, it's more of an homage. And basically, he's got to get out. And
The Grape Escape.
It's The Grape Escape.
The Grape.
But along the way, he runs into a character played by Steve Zahn who's called Bad Ape. And Bad Ape is...
Bad Ape.
Bad Ape is an ape who used to be in a zoo. And was always called Bad Ape, because he didn't do what the trainers wanted him to do. And he provides the comic relief to the movie.
Fun. He's kind of good. And he kind of, like, he's a comic
relief.
He's been gone. He's another guy we're talking about.
Yeah, funny. You know what you're going to say. Like, what happened to his career?
He was, like, the go-to guy
He was the funny stoner. He was in that Matthew McConaughey. They did two of those terrible movies.
What's his name who played...
He was in Out of Sight, which we were talking about earlier, the Jennifer Lopez thing.
There's another guy just like him who also...
He's back.
Yeah, and he's great.
And he's funny.
And he provides a compliment. There's also a little girl. My favorite part of the fact is the little girl she doesn't speak, right, Mike? Is it her?
She's mute.
Yeah, she's mute. She's a little a human girl, I should say, not an ape girl. And they take her along. And at one point, they have to come up with a name for her, and they reach into the trash.
Don't
and
tell them. Don't give it away.
All right.
Oh, that's a spoiler.
Right. But it's very cool.
It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's
of the
nice.
Movie.
It's,
so
it's
there are
nice
a lot
surprise.
Of nice touches. It really is worthwhile seeing. I even like the soundtrack to it.
Well, okay. First of all, let me just say this.
Tracking very well.
I did like it. I liked it a lot. I had some issues.
Okay.
I had some
what
problems.
Issues did you have?
Well, I'll get to the issues. I'm gonna tell you what I like first, and then I'll tell you the issues.
Did you see it in IMAX or 3D or any enhanced way at all?
I saw it in some big.
And when we ask you if you saw it in an enhanced way, we really should put it out there.
Exactly. Yes. But I did. I saw it. If it was IMAX, I saw it in IMAX. I saw whatever the big.
I saw
way
it in
is.
The Fox screening room.
All right. Is that what you saw?
Oh, yeah. The little one.
And first of all, I like what they're doing. You know, I'm a big fan of the original Planet of the Apes. And the original Planet of the Apes was never meant to have sequels. And it was really a giant Twilight Zone episode. It was even written by
Rod Serling. It had an ending that said...
Rod Serling wrote
that. Rod Serling wrote that.
He wrote the screenplay.
The ending of it...
No, I'm sorry. Edwin Starr wrote it.
That's what I'm saying.
Twilight Zone ending.
It is a Twilight Zone episode. So,
guys, Edwin Starr wrote that.
All right. Truth be told, Rod Serling wrote the screenplay. They brought in Michael Wilson.
I'm sorry. Did he write it alone or was it...
He wrote it alone, and then they brought in Michael Wilson to kind of change it a bit when they didn't get the money they wanted. Because in the novels, the Pierre Boulez novels, okay, just so you know, when the apes When he lands on the ape planet or monkey planet, in the book, yeah, when Taylor lands, it's as modern as today. So in actuality, when they made Beneath the Planet of the Apes, which is a pretty bad movie, it was just fun to see everybody again. It's a bad movie. Then it made so much money, they said, let's make a third one. Third one, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, is actually pretty good. And it's pretty good because it is actually the novel in verse. Okay, because they come and everything that happens to them is what happened to Taylor with the baby and Nova and all that stuff. So, that being said, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, it's just more apes. None of them were really very good.
Then you had the reboots.
Right. Now, let's not even talk about the awful Tim Burton. I wiped that from my memory, okay? The only good thing was it had Heston playing an ape. That's the only good thing.
Very cool junket. We went to Roseland, which in New York, which was completely made over into a Planet of the Apes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Do you have pictures of that?
I remember Paul Giamatti going, well, how much did this cost? This is crazy. We had no craft service. So wait a minute. Let me just ask you, on the Darwin ape chain, does this have a place in terms of the way Star Wars has...
This is where I'm leading. What I like about these films is they are taking their time in giving us a somewhat realistic explanation as to how we could end up to where Charlton Heston was in the first movie.
Which is a fancy way of saying they're prequels.
They're prequels that are well thought out as opposed to afterthoughts.
Yeah,
like the original
they're all planned
sequels.
Out.
Right.
Yeah. And this one seems to be, I think.
Clearly. They've created an arc, and I enjoyed it. I had some issues. There are a few things in there that I had issues with. I don't know if you guys heard about the controversy. I don't believe in the controversy. I think it's really reaching. Have you heard about the controversy?
No. Tell us about the controversy.
Okay. It's a ridiculous controversy. If you haven't seen the film, Bad Ape wears a sleeveless ski vest, okay?
It's a controversy
about
that.
Listen to me. The
like
sleeveless
Trump?
Ski vest that he wears is the same sleeveless ski vest that the head of Black Lives Matter wears. And so people are saying that the producers are trying to say the Black Lives Matter guy is an ape.
Really?
Somebody called my show about this. I said, that's ludicrous. I'm a Black guy. I love Planet of the Apes movies. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. But anyway.
Somebody called in and said that to you, or you said?
Somebody called in to talk about that controversy. And I was
and that was your comment.
My comment.
And what have they said?
Thing.
Total coincidence? Like bullshit?
No,
they haven't really.
They wanted to know what I thought.
And no, I mean the movie makers. Has anybody said anything?
I don't know
what
the movie makers have said. I've only been reading about it in Black social media that it's a controversy in there. People are, you know, boycott Planet of the Apes because they're making fun. It's ridiculous.
Man.
It's always something.
I have another friend who saw the movie who had issues with that same little blonde girl that you described. The mute girl. That same little blonde girl becomes friends with the big, you know,
orangutan.
Gorilla. No, the gorilla. The gorilla, which is a King Kong thing. And that brings up a whole references to the savage and the blonde. And I don't buy that either. I think my friend, he's older than me. He's got some issues too. Anyway, point being, okay, I liked it. I had issues. The Woody Harrelson character, let me just say, they set him up as being this great thing. And I understand the irony they're going for, but it's kind of like a lot of nothing. His speeches really didn't make much sense. His motivation didn't really make much sense.
You recommend the film, Mike?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're going to make a ton of money this weekend.
A ton of money. I liked it a lot.
Make a ton.
My problems are minor.
Will it beat last week's winner?
Here's the question.
Spider-Man?
He asked a question.
Good question. Yes, I think it will.
Well, here's the question.
Oh, no. Here's the question, Bill.
Back to your original, which you were saying a few minutes ago about you saying that film critics becoming sort of irrelevant and Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, a lot of these Planet of the Apes films, like the Tim Burton one that you referenced, you know, they weren't doing the banner business, okay? Because word of mouth got out that it wasn't that good. So you're saying this is going to do banner business because there's a good buzz around it. So if film critics are becoming not as necessary in the scheme of things, where is this buzz emanating from? Is it emanating from Rotten Tomatoes? Is it going to make a ton of money because critics gave it good reviews because it hasn't opened yet? I mean, we're sitting here on a Wednesday.
A movie like this, it's not about like the reviews.
Okay, but I'm telling you, other Planet of the Apes movies did not. You tell me you're not going to open. Didn't
Well, the last two did pretty good. They did pretty good. They would be still making. They did very well. They did solid business. Planet of the Apes is a franchise, is a solid money making franchise. It's not going to be in the top 20 most money making films of all time, but they will definitely make back 2, 3, 4 times their money. And I believe this film will end up worldwide doing somewhere between 600 and 700 million.
I think the real answer to your question is that movie audiences are waiting for something big. The last big thing they had was Wonder Woman. They were underwhelmed by The Mummy. We've had some real sort of crash and burns this summer.
Terrible.
And so people are just looking for something to see. And if they go and tell other people it's good, they're going to have $150 million weekend.
And that's a good point. But also, I have to say, you know, The Mummy, Marvel Creative Universe, what all the studios are doing is trying to have universes that people want to revisit and characters they want to revisit. And this Planet of the Apes gives you more apes per capita than
more apes than per square inch.
Per square inch, which is what happened with the other films. With the other films, it's like, as they, you know, as you know, okay, first it's just Zero and Cornelius, and then all right, there's more apes, and then there's more apes. As there's more and more apes, people want to see. People want to see people, apes fighting and shooting.
Now, have you revisited the original one?
At least once a year.
Okay, now how do you think the makeup on that one compares? If you look at it today.
Still works. It's not.
They
gonna,
were masks, right?
They were, well, or it was they, prosthetic they, masks, and they had to scrunch their faces, but they it
had
still
to
works.
Be, they had to be better if these are prequels.
Well, it still works, I think, and I think largely it works because of the actors, because of the story, because, again, the eyes. Which tells you everything. The biggest downside of CGI characters, full CGI characters, is the eyes. They're lifeless. But when you have real eyes, or eyes that are really based on reality, I think that's a large part of. Do you agree or disagree?
Though I wonder if they actually use the eyes in this.
Well, they use it as a guide. Yeah. You know, because they've gotten a lot better with eyes.
Yeah.
Bill McCuddy brought up a subject. Sent me an article. Earlier in the week that I'd actually like to discuss. And why don't you, Bill, tell...
Somebody wrote an interesting think piece this week about whether or not we'd have good movies if we didn't have an Oscar season, which seems like a ridiculous statement. But then they went into how, and this does make some sense to me, how little movies would never be seen if they weren't being marketed with way more money than they would ever bring back
for
in the
Oscar
beginning
campaign.
For the Oscar season, for the end of the year. So in other words, if you build it, did it come, or which came first, the chicken or the egg? The Oscar movie or the Oscar season that created the Oscar movie?
Who wants to go first?
Jump in,
right, well,
anyway.
My thought on that, I have a lot of thoughts on that because Neil had mentioned this the other day. I think that it comes back to what we were talking about before, you know, where it's marketing and what I could only call the fragmentation of the movie-going audience, okay? At this point, you know, the battle between TV and film has been around for a very long time, you know.
TV's never been as good as it is now.
Well, no, I mean, TV's never been as good as it is now, but again, what brings you to TV, okay? What makes you keep watching a show? Why do people binge-watch, okay?
I get involved in the story and the characters.
Okay,
nothing,
exactly.
I can't even boil it down to anything simpler than that.
All right, and I'll say this. That's what movies are trying to do today. What movies are trying to do today is create characters, universes, worlds, just like, you know, any good sequel is just a continuation, the advancing of the story of a character that you love. That's why they made 4 Lethal Weapon movies. Not because they got better, but because the story, the characters advance. So that's what any good sequel does, and that's what all these universes are. That's why they're working when they do work.
But those aren't Oscar movies.
No. But coming back to that, so I was talking about the relationship.
I don't think that's why they're making sequels. I think the reason
Hollywood
makes...
No, I'm saying that's why people are going to see these
movies. I think the reason you make sequels, if you're a studio, is that, you know, well, this made $800 million.
Right.
It's got a built-in audience. Let's make another one.
Right.
You guys are saying the same thing.
No, but what I'm saying is what makes a good one, what makes people keep coming back is because they love those characters and they want to see it. So
yeah.
That, all right, but that I'm just talking about the relationship, how movies have influenced TV and TV influence movies. But what has happened with movies is they're in competition with TV in a different way now. Like you said, TV is great. Why would you want to go to the movies, okay? And who is the audience? They've cannibalized the audience. A lot of, you know, their big-budget movies, epic, you know, event films, they dominate all summer long. That's what people go to
see. Well, these are the tentpole movies that the studios put millions of dollars... They all rally around the movie, each studio has one or two or three of them per summer, that they're generally comic book movies or dopey comedies, but generally comic book movies that have lots of special effects. They can sell them internationally. The scripts are really weak, but, you know, they're tentpole movies. That's right. What they are. But I will say that having, you know, our show Talking Pictures, our television show, having seen 10 movies a week, little small independent films that nobody had any illusions when they made those films that they were going to get nominated for Oscars, most of them. Those films are still being made. The pleasure about doing that show, which I said in the farewell episode, although we're still trying to get it back on TV, and we'll have more about that next week, but is that there were all these great little movies that people were making, and I think they're still making those movies.
Right.
And I think they still will continue to make those movies. And it's easier. Look, okay. If you go back to...
But without the Oscars, would they be seen?
Wait, this is where I'm
would
going.
Would they be seen without the Oscars?
Yes, they'd be sold to On Demand or something like that.
All right, well, this is where I'm going. That's where I was going in a long-winded way.
Listen, anybody can make a movie now. They made that movie with iPhones.
Tangerine.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, it used to be prior to the mid-1960s or even 1970s, there were no portable video cameras. You couldn't make a movie. I mean, if you wanted to make a movie, you had to have a studio to make a movie. Literally, we could film this podcast and make a movie. Maybe nobody would see it, but I mean, anybody could.
I don't think there's
a
maybe about that.
well, that's where I was going to say that the audience is segmented now. And I think that I didn't read the article, but what I my opinion on that and just the whole idea of the Oscars, I think the article's right in that there's a certain audience that, you know, movie-going experience is a very specific thing. You're experiencing it. Like, why do comedies and science fiction? Because it's a group experience. You know, you go to the science fiction spectacle. Wow. You know, everybody's doing it at the same time. Same thing with a comedy. Nothing better than going to see a comedy and everybody's laughing and it's really funny. It's a great experience. It's like going to see a comedian. Same thing with a drama. If everybody's with it, or a good thriller, a good movie-going experience is that. But if you're of a certain age, of a certain intellect, of a certain ilk, you know, you're not interested in those comic book movies and those stupid comedies or those things. You're interested in other films. A lot of those type of stories are being told, as you said, really well on TV. So why should you leave your living room?
All right, so let's look at the Oscar nominees from last year. Manchester by the Sea.
Right.
La La Land.
Nobody would have seen Manchester by the Sea if it hadn't got a huge Oscar push.
Nobody would have seen the movie Moonlight.
Okay, which one? Okay, you know, you can go through the list of the films. We usually talk about this every year and how the vast majority of the...
No tentpoles.
Of the Oscar nominees are not the movies that are making the most at the box office.
Right.
They are these artsy, grown-up kind of movies.
Well, you hit it on the head. Grown-up. Grown-ups don't go to the movies that much.
Do you think they would... Okay, if there was no Oscars, okay, but there is, would a movie like Manchester by the Sea get made? Would it have gotten the funding?
I think it would have gotten made. I don't think it would have been seen nearly as much as it has been.
But I also think that, you know, also you bring up a good point, too. I also think that the money, the economics of it, wouldn't make sense to spend too much money or to get too many stars in these quote-unquote prestige projects if they're not going to make money. If they can't make money theatrically, then they won't, you know, the theatrical release of a movie like that is only going to help its long-term ancillary, you know.
Okay. But, now, here's the scary part.
But there's a new wrinkle in all this in that Manchester by the Sea was produced by Amazon.
Well,
and the finances are a whole lot different.
Yes, they are.
And Netflix doesn't want to put movies. They don't want to four-wall them. Listen, here's the problem.
They don't care.
Here's the problem for the future. Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and Vulu, anybody who's going to create new content, they don't give a shit about the Oscars.
Nope.
They just want to put them on and let people find them tell them what to
but
watch.
This guy, a woman who wrote the article, I don't know what gender the person who wrote the article is correct in the sense that, you know, people were touting this movie, which I liked, actually, Birth of a Nation. The Birth of a Nation.
I did too.
That was going to be the Oscar forerunner last year, you know? And all of a sudden, you know, the guy who wrote and directed and starred in the movie came into some, you know, controversy that there was a rape incident in college. And all of a sudden, that movie...
Edwin Starr.
Edwin Starr. That's called the comeback.
It's callback.
But okay. Callback. It's called the callback. Great. What do I know? He's the comic, Bill McCuddy. So, yeah.
Sometimes.
You know, so all of a sudden, that movie fell off of the Oscar radar.
But that's a smear campaign argument. That's a totally different conversation to have.
Yeah, but that's the other thing, though. You know, you bring up a good point.
It goes to the point of, like, yeah, if a movie's going to get nominated.
If it gets nominated, again, there are a number of movies. Like, everybody thought The Beguiled was going to be the next thing. It's Sofia Coppola, da-da. And the reception was like, you know, the last one was better. You know, so around Oscar time, they may try and do a push, but if it doesn't click, if it hasn't clicked...
Beguiled was missing a couple of scenes.
What? Beguiled was missing a number of
scenes. I don't want to give anything away, but if you've seen the original...
I've seen the original many times.
This one is to be admired, but there's a couple of things that happen.
Somebody wants to see The Beguiled.
Something happens to Colin Farrell that affects one of the women, and she has no reaction to it. It's just completely... Yep.
If you wanted to see The Beguiled, did you see the original?
No, I didn't see the Don.
See the original. See the Don Siegel.
Don Siegel version.
Watch that again.
Would you say see the original or see the remake?
See the original.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
Even though the new one with
the new one is all mood and like
but you could graphically.
Nicole Kidman is very good. I will say that.
She is very good.
But it's you know, it's funny. It's too short. No one says that anymore. But it's missing a couple of key scenes that I can't. If you haven't seen the movie,
well,
I can't
there
really.
There are a number of things that I think are missing. I think the backstories of both characters are missing, especially Nicole Kidman's character.
Right.
I think it's significant. It's a significant backstory.
Right.
I also think the removal of the black character. Now we have yet another film about the Civil War that somehow avoids what the Civil War was about or any of that. And I thought that character added a lot in the film.
Before we go, I promise we talk about a ghost story.
I saw it. I think it's going to make no money. This is the Casey Affleck, the movie that I think some people... I had lunch with a big producer yesterday. She walked out on it at Sundance. But she just didn't... the movie is more of a vibe than a movie. It's kind of like Terrence Malick and Guillermo del Toro in their early years made like a low budget film. It's some will call it the Emperor's New Bedsheet, but it's basically Casey Affleck in a ghost costume walking around. And when I say that sounds horrible, it does, but it works like gangbusters, I think. It's very moody, lots of long shots, so it's not going to make any money. But
well, how does it compare to, you say moody, like the movie The Witch. Did you see the movie?
It's not scary. This isn't scary. This is about ghosts living in a space and how they interact with real people. And it's not about slamming doors and goofy. No. But you know what it should be?
Where the vampires are arguing about, like...
No, it's not a comedy at all.
I love that movie. I love What We Do in the Dark or something like that. I love that movie.
That's a great movie.
I love that movie, really.
It's the Flight of the Concords, people.
I love that movie.
Really funny movie.
This should be funny because...
Bickering vampires. It's your turn to wash the dishes. I did it last week. No, I mopped the floor. I mean, this is great.
I love it. I love that.
This should be funny because Casey Affleck looks like Pigpen in the Charlie Brown when he was, you know... And the dirt comes up from under him, and he's walking around in a Charlie Brown Halloween. But it's not. This actually works. I want to say before we go, new on demand this week, F8, The Fate of the Furious. You can miss that. The Zookeeper's Wife with Jessica Chastain and Daniel Brühl about a Warsaw Zoo. I thought we've talked about that in the show before, that they cared more about the animals than they did about the Jews.
And there's a lot of holes in that because when the... When the Nazis discover that the Jews are living in the zoo and have been hidden in the zoo, they are given a heads up and the Jews flee, and then it's the end of the war and we don't know how all of those Jews survived. Why don't you write that in? Plus, as I mentioned also in the show, you made the Daniel Brühl character be so evil. There's a scene towards the end with Jessica Chastain that's so overly written. Like, I think you used the phrase Snidely Whiplash, Bill, to describe how evil the character. I mean, listen, it's just, it's not horrible, but it just doesn't really work for me.
We're going to talk about Dunkirk, the new Chris Nolan movie, next week.
And we will talk about
In advance of that, you might want to watch Their Finest, which is... a good film to see because it involves Dunkirk and two writers working on a propaganda film about that. It's this woman is so underrated. Gemma Arterton?
Arterton. Gemma Arterton. I think she's really good.
And Bill Nighy is always amazing. He's in this
Bill
as
Nighy,
an old actor.
Phone book,
yeah. Also new on demand, Norman and the Moderate Rise and Tragic Fall of a New York Fixer, starring Richard Gere. And Certain Women with Kristen Stewart, Laura Dern, and Michelle Williams, which is a female-directed drama set in the Northwest that got incredible reviews and just died in theaters, and is something like 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. Not that we agree with them all the time, but worth checking out, probably.
Do we have time for one more topic, or should we leave it for next week?
We're 42 minutes now. Right, Bill so has we'll guests coming, so.
All right, so we'll say goodbye, and next week we'll talk about those movies that we talked about.
I'm so glad. We
and if you're
time.
Still with us, and I hope you still are, I will tell. I'll get into more detail about our efforts to bring Talking Pictures back to television. I spend most of my week trying to do that, and
it's just sad, really.
Really close, but I won't say that we're light years away from it either.
Can we get a hashtag bring back Talking Pictures? Hashtag.
Sure.
Well, there was a hashtag.
Two or three people will trend that.
We missed Talking Pictures.
Let's do it.
Two or three.
Hashtag bring back Talking Pictures. And listen, you know, I've told there is a loyal following on this podcast, which I appreciate. Please email, tweet us if you want to ask us any questions at all, and we'll read them if they're worthy, and try to answer your questions on the podcast. You could reach me at Neil Rose and Apples on Twitter. You could reach Bill McCuddy at Bill McCuddy. This is really easy. And you could reach Mike Sargent at
Mike on screen.
Mike Sargent
Mike on
got
screen.
More different handles, which I won't divulge your emails that
well,
I've...
All
right, Mike on screen. And Bill Bergoli...
So you'll see me in the subway. Just tell me.
Yeah, close your coat next
don't
time.
Don't sing in the subway, darling. Who wrote that? Who sang that one? That's my...
Edwin Starr. Okay, that's all the time we have,
Chula Clark. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll talk movies with you next time.